Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd.
Buy me some. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Baseball and music. They've been connected since the first baseball song was written in 1858. Since then, the sport has inspired songs by some great musicians: Count Basie, Frank Sinatra, Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen. Some ballplayers are themselves musicians, and it seems just about every big star these days has a personal theme song that plays when they make their entrance. In a moment, we'll look at some of the many connections between music and baseball. To begin, though, as we speak, the Yanks are leading 3-1 in their home opener up in the Bronx. But a mini-controversy has made sport headlines this past week between the team and their crosstown rivals involving this song. As any Yankee fan will tell you, relief pitcher Mariano Rivera has used Metallica's Enter Sandman as his entrance music throughout his championship years with the Yanks. Now, Mets relief pitcher Billy Wagner is claiming it as his own. Joining us on the line is Richard Sandomir, TV sports columnist for the New York Times, to explain what this is all about and why players have theme songs to begin with. Richard, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you today?
Okay, so what is this all much ado about nothing, or is there something really going on here with the Enter Sandman controversy?
Well, there are certainly more legitimate controversies in American life, but you know, Yankee fans are very proprietary about what they feel is theirs. And even though Billy Wagner came to the Mets having used Enter Sandman before Mariano Rivera did, he started using it in Houston a year or two before Rivera started doing it in New York, a controversy that was generated and stoked a lot by another radio station, WFAN, found people getting very upset about how could Wagner have the nerve to do this? How can the Mets have the nerve to do this? They're co-opting what Rivera did. And it made for a very interesting but very strange controversy. It's sort of like two women walking into a dressy affair wearing the same dress.
Right, I guess so. And it seems that Mariano Rivera doesn't, I mean, he didn't pick this song, right?
He didn't pick it. It's not his kind of music. It is more in the musical wheelhouse of Billy Wagner. But Wagner had this song chosen for him by his teammate Jeff Bagwell, who didn't like the song that he was entering into games with Houston. So Bagwell chose this Metallica song, and it's been his for, I guess, 8 or 9 years. About a season or two before Rivera started using his.
Yeah. Now, many players, it seems like every time, you know, you go to a Yankee game, it seems like every player has a theme song. In general, are the players picking these songs, or is somebody who has access to the PA picking stuff?
It's a combination of it. I think it's probably, in a minority of cases, it's the players, it's the marketing people, it's someone in, again, control of the PA who plays the music during the game. You know, it used to be, you know, if an Italian player came to the bat, you'd hear a tarantella. You know, it used to be just ethnic music, but now, you know, players and teams have the various tastes, and everybody knows who goes to a bowl game now how loud games are, especially between innings. And, you know, heavy metal, hard rock, hip-hop, all that is what appeals to players, especially younger players now in all sports. So when they have a chance to do it, and certainly the relief pitcher has the most dramatic entrance of just about every player, except maybe if Barry Bonds comes off the bench in the ninth inning to hit a home run. But, you know, 30-some-odd years ago, when Sparky Lyle was the star reliever for the Yankees, he'd enter to the much tamer Pomp and Circumstance. Pomp and Circumstance and Enter Sandman probably do not belong in the same musical sentence.
Yeah, yeah. So the idea, the practice of player theme songs is perhaps not new, but, you know, certainly, Richard, you go to the ballpark and the din is deafening, and very little of it has anything to do with the game. It's all about pumping up the fans and making people get loud.
Yeah, I think it's part of the philosophy that there isn't enough action in baseball, so why not create some false sense of something happening with the music? But just getting back to the theme songs for a second, one of the popularizers, certainly of relief pitchers having theme songs, is the movie Major League, where Charlie Sheen would enter into the song Wild Thing because he was Wild Thing.
Mm-hmm. So you put a lot of this at the feet of that film, of Major League.
For the last 10 or 15 years, more and more players have. I think I saw a list of about a dozen to 18 relievers who have their own personal theme songs.
All right. We're speaking with Richard Sandomir, TV sports columnist for The New York Times. Richard, just in closing, who do you think is going to get to keep Enter Sandman?
You know, it's going to be up to Wagner to give it up. And given his reaction so far, he's amused by it. He said he's not giving it up. I think we're going to have a Sandman battle for the rest of the season. I don't think we're going to hear him answer to Mr. Sandman or to Goodnight, Sweetheart.
All right.
I think it's going to be a Metallica battle through the end of the season. And next month is interleague play, so let's see what happens when the two teams are playing. And both men enter, perhaps in the same ninth inning, to the same song.
All right. Well, Richard, all of that makes me want to echo the sigh that preceded that last answer. Richard Sandomir, TV sports columnist for The New York Times, thanks for joining us this afternoon on Soundcheck.
Take care.
4-1, the current score. Yanks are leading in the ballpark in the Bronx. And joining us now on the line from Cooperstown, New York, home of the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, is Tim Wiles. He is the director of research at the Hall of Fame. He also happens to be an authority on baseball music. Tim, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
So I understand that by your count, there are over 1,300 baseball songs.
Absolutely. Found that number yesterday while playing around. There's a program going around the country. It just started, called the Baseball Music Project, which is an orchestral series where Dave Winfield narrates the program for local symphony orchestras, and a conductor who's a great lover of baseball music has put together about 25 pieces, and he says on his website that he reviewed 1,300 in order to get to that. And I have a feeling that effort also, just sort of by its musical nature, ignored sort of the singer-songwriter folk type movement.
Right. Now, before we get too far into the conversation, Tim, let's give people a chance to hear perhaps the most famous baseball song. In fact, let me get the word perhaps out of the sentence. This is the most famous baseball song ever written, and we don't know the half of it. Here's Carly Simon to perform a little bit of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
She had the fever and she had it bad, just to root for the hometown crew. Every cent that Katie spent on one Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said no. I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, 'cause it's root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, 'cause it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Katie Casey saw all the games, knew all the players by their first names, told the umpire he was wrong all along, and she was strong when the score was 2-2.
Well, that's how the song really goes, although, Tim Wiles, we generally just hear the refrain of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Absolutely. One of the great things about that song, written by Jack Norworth, the lyricist, and Albert von Tilzer, who wrote 2,500 songs together, is that neither one of them had ever done what Yankee fans are doing today, been to a Major League Baseball game in 1908 when it was written.
Wow. Okay. Now, Carly Simon, I thought she said, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, maybe Carly did. But, you know, this Cracker Jack, of course, is the actual name of the confection. And, of course, it rhymes with, I don't care if I ever get back.
All right.
Backs.
So not only do we not know the verses to the song, we even get the refrain wrong when we sing it usually.
Bad-mouthing Carly Simon on the radio.
Well, she certainly has plenty of company. Tim Wiles is director of research at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown, New York. How far back does the tradition of songs about baseball go?
Well, of course, to 1858, two songs were written and published in that year. That's, of course, with anything in baseball, the earliest we know of. But baseball's origin controversies are like those of anything else. There may be something earlier. One of the great early New York City and national contributions to baseball is the father of baseball writing, Henry Chadwick, also wrote over 50 instrumental compositions. Little-known fact that has been recently brought to light by another New York City baseball and music guy, Peter Nash, who was the founder of the rap group Third Base and is completing a book on Chadwick right now.
Chadwick, who, as I recall, was born in England, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And is buried in Brooklyn.
In Greenwood.
Greenwood Cemetery. Along with a number of the other stars of the very earliest years of baseball. Now, in 1858, when the Baseball Polka was composed, baseball was very much a regional sport, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Well, there's a little bit of, there are two ways to think about that. We can think of baseball at that time as rural, but we can also think of it as urban. I mean, if you think of Manhattan at the time, above maybe 23rd Street, I guess, it was fairly rural, and the same true of Brooklyn. So we think of it sometimes as a city game, and other times we realize that the city looked a lot different in the mid-19th century than it does today.
So when did the tradition, say, of the ballpark organ get started?
Well, that's surprising. There are a lot of surprising things in baseball music. The Cubs installed the first ballpark organ actually in 1941. We tend to think with that it would be a lot older tradition prior to that, and most of the other clubs followed suit quite quickly. I think today we're down to about 10 live organists in the majors. You mentioned the tendency to pipe in music between innings and so forth, and in my personal opinion, we're losing a little something. Those organists can be very...
We're losing hearing, Tim.
Exactly. And also wit. Like, I remember being at the 1996 All-Star Game in Philly, and today the Royals are playing the Yankees, and one of the Royals players is Mark Grudziolanek. Well, he was in the All-Star Game for the Expos that year, and he pinch hit in about the seventh or eighth inning, and the organist played Jim Croce's I Got a Name.
Ah,
so
Mark Grudziolanek, who has a name and a half, doesn't he?
Exactly.
Why are there so many songs about baseball, especially when you compare them to the number of songs about any other sport in America?
I think for me, I come at music from a kind of a literary perspective. I'm not a musician myself, so literary historical perspective. I think this is a variation of the question, why is there so much good writing about baseball, poetry, literature, essays, and so forth? And of course, if I could answer that question, I guess I'd be an even better librarian at the Baseball Hall of Fame. But something in this game inspires us culturally in a way that, fortunately or unfortunately, basketball and football and soccer and hockey don't seem to do. Have you heard a good golf song lately?
No, I can't say that I have. But I think you've touched on something, that baseball is more than a sport. It is part of the cultural fabric of American life, especially in the 20th century. And I guess Jackie Robinson, you write that he's one of the players who's inspired the most songs, and certainly
absolutely,
his appearance in Major League Baseball was a cultural landmark.
Absolutely. So the two sides, the culture and the game, culture broadly defined as, you know, literature and history and social change and so forth, they go back and forth. You know, the great amount of music proves that the game is important to the culture and vice versa. But Jackie is probably second only to Babe Ruth in terms of having aroused the musical interest of folks. to write about him. In
right. Tell us about this 1949 recording by the Count Basie Orchestra.
I'm not sure that I can say anything that is more sublime than the recording itself.
All right. It's called Did You See Jackie Robinson Hit That Ball?
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? It went zooming across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball.
And when he swung his bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball.
We're speaking with Tim Wiles, the director of research at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, which is located, of course, in Cooperstown, New York. We're talking about baseball and music. Count Basie and his orchestra, 1949 recording. Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? Tim, what about players who are themselves musicians? That's a surprisingly long list.
It is a kind of a long list. Most people that are baseball fans, of course, have heard of Jack McDowell being a rock and roll guitarist. I think his band is called Stick Figure. New York City listeners, of course, know that Bernie Williams, who's playing today in the Bronx, is a classical guitarist. I've had the pleasure of hearing him, and he's quite good as far as I'm concerned. But there's a lot more to it than that. One of my favorite stories is that the great double play combination, Tinker to Evers to Chance, Tinker and Evers, as a quick sidelight, didn't talk to each other for many years, an argument over cab fare, but that didn't stop the Tin Pan Alley from writing a song which they claimed that Tinker and Evers had written called Between You and Me.
Mm-hmm. And do you buy that the two of them co-wrote it, or do we know better?
I think there are probably some cases where ghostwriting is a strong possibility. Another favorite of a similar or slightly later era is the great Cardinal teams, the Gas House Gang, had their own band and appeared on the radio playing what you might call Americana folk music,
mm-hmm.
Arkansas Traveler, Turkey in the Straw, things like that, led by Pepper Martin. So sometimes you think of these guys, wild men on the bass paths, but gentle musicians as well.
All right. Now, Bernie Williams, you mentioned, a longtime center fielder for the New York Yankees, displaced from that position this year by Johnny Damon, but still picking at the guitar. Here he is playing a song by the great Brazilian guitarist Baden Powell. Bernie Williams, he's in pretty good form here, playing the Samba Novo by Baden Powell. His teammates in pretty good form as well. They're leading 4-2 over the Royals at Yankee Stadium in their home opener. We're talking to Tim Wiles at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown about music and music and baseball. Tim, you mentioned before the Baseball Music Project. The Seattle Symphony is taking part in this thing during the course of the summer, touring orchestral program. I understand they're actually doing orchestral versions of those 1858 songs, the first baseball songs that we know of.
Yes, they are. They opened the other night, and I wish I had been. It was actually in Bakersfield, California, but goes to Seattle next. And I wish that I had been there, but they're doing that. They're doing Did You See Jackie Robinson Hit That Ball, as well as the great song Joltin' Joe DiMaggio, which almost became timely again with Jimmy Rollins' hitting streak that went to, I think, 38 games.
38 games, right.
So, but it seems like it's going to be fun. I think the Baseball Music Project, which if people are interested is at baseballmusicproject.com, is slated to appear in most U.S. cities over the next 4 years as kind of an effort to reach out to new audiences by symphony orchestras. So it sounds like it's going to be fun.
All right. Well, we try and keep our audience up to date, and I'm told now it is 4-3.
Ooh.
Yankees over the Royals. Tim, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention a song like Dave Frischberg's Van Lingle Mungo from 1969. What's this song about?
Well, of course, the lyrics to this song, Van Lingle Mungo was a Dodger pitcher in the 30s, I believe,
mm-hmm.
my numbers right, dates right. There's a great story because Take Me Out to the Ball Game, of course, was written on a New York City subway car by Jack Norworth in 1908. And Van Lingle Mungo was written in 1969 by Dave Frischberg on a New York City bus. So two of the great baseball songs of all time written on New York City public transportation. But what happened is Frischberg, as I understand it, had written the music and tried out three or four sets of lyrics having nothing to do with baseball. And in frustration, he did what many of us might do, got up, got away from his work, and went book shopping, and picked up the first edition of the Baseball Encyclopedia, published in 1969. And on the bus home was leafing through it, as so many baseball fans love to do. The names are just so evocative of their different eras. And he just said, hey, the names from my youth scan perfectly for this song. And so it's a pretty sublime piece as well. I'm glad that you brought it up.
It's a really lovely work from Dave Frischberg. And as our mood sours here in the studio, as the Royals have tied the Yankees 4-4, we bid a fond farewell to Tim Wiles, Director of Research at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown, an expert on music and baseball. Tim, thanks very much for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you, John. Happy opening day.
Thanks, you too.
Danny Gardella, Van Lingle. Whitey Karowski, Max Lanier, Eddie Waitkus, and Johnny Vandermeer. Bob Estalella.
This is Soundcheck. In a moment, the record label J-Dub helped launch the career of Hasidic reggae star Matas Yahu, but now that he's dropped the label, what's next for J-Dub? The founders of the label join me to discuss what's in store, plus British art rockers Art Brut.
Al Trotsky, Augie Gullin, and Pinky May.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Every day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.